All right, welcome to Making the Argument. Before we get started, I have a very important announcement. We have a brand new deal with GoodRanchers.com. That's right. If you go into Good Ranchers and you use promo code Nick and you sign up for one of their subscriptions, you're not only going to get $15 off, but do you remember the old deal where you got 2 pounds of ground beef with each order? Well, we just upped the game. That's right. You can choose top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon now. Every single order you get on that subscription is going to come with free top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon. You get to choose which one if you use promo code Nick. And again, $15 off on top of that. That's a savings of $480 in meat by signing up for one of those subscriptions. Not to mention the fact that if you are looking for a gift for someone that is impossible to shop for, you can go on to goodranchers.com and get one of their brand new gift boxes. Now, this is a limited time only offer. It's part of their overall Black Friday special. So go on to goodranchers.com to get more details. Sign up for promo code Nick in order to get that deal, and let's get on with the show.
Hi, this is Nick Freitas, and today on Making the Argument, we're going to go behind the scenes on what it took to actually set up this podcast in the first place. We're going to be making the argument and dissecting socialism in the classroom, and then finally, we'll finish off with things that make America great. This is Nick Freitas, and this is Making the Argument.
One thing I've learned is this: in politics and in combat, cowardice is contagious, but so is courage. And if you're willing to be the first person over those ramparts, you will be shocked at how many people will come with you. I'm asking you to come with me. I'm asking you to be a part of the generation that will restore the promise of this country and breathe new life into it.
So behind the scenes, why did we do this podcast in the first place? So obviously, a lot of us listen to a lot of different podcasts. There's a lot of different genres that you can go out there, and it's been a great mechanism and a medium for being able to explain various concepts to people, to talk about history, talk about current events. And we wanted to do something that was going to allow us to regularly interact with our constituents, with the population in general, to just be able to talk about things that are important to us with respect to political philosophy, our country. And so as we're going through this idea, it sounds simple, but I'll tell you what, it was several months in the making and getting the proper equipment, the proper lighting. It takes a lot of video editing to make me look good. That's what this comes down to. And so we're able to bring in our producer, Nick Hamilton. Say hi, Nick.
Hey, everybody.
Nick Hamilton's here. He's done this a lot. He's really good at it. He's really taken us from kind of the bare bones concept into what you're about to see in this podcast. And so we're very proud of it. We got our executive producer, Joe Desolé. I had to fight with him on months, right? Because Joe's a perfectionist. He wants to make sure that if we're going to do something, we do it right and it looks good. And so Joe's been huge on helping us put this together. But we're really excited about this. This is something that we're going to do regularly throughout the year. Keep people up to date on what's going on and really equip them to be able to make the argument for the things that they believe in, to be able to defend freedom effectively in their daily lives, whether it's conversations with a coworker, whether it's educating your kids, or it's debating that one person on Facebook that just quite frankly drives you nuts. So we hope you enjoy the show. This is a little bit of an intro into, again, what it took to put this all together. And if you're interested in starting your own podcast, believe me, we have learned a lot through the process. So this is Nick Freitas, and we're going to move into Making the Argument: Socialism and the Indoctrination That Takes Place on a Day-to-Day Basis Within the College Classroom. So I'm sitting in this college classroom, and you got to understand, I went to college a little bit later in life. You know, I had been in the military, I'd had a couple combat tours, I was married, 3 kids, a mortgage. You know, I wasn't going to college for the, you know, quote unquote college experience. I was going to college because I just wanted to complete my degree in order to help me in my job. That's why I was there. And I really did have a great experience. It was interesting at times. I did some of it online. I did some of it in the classroom. And I think a lot of people have been having that experience lately, that college is not a one-size-fits-all endeavor. But there was one case in particular that was very unique for me. And I'm sitting in my college, and it was an English literature class. And it's important to understand that this was English literature, right? It wasn't an economics class. And our professor gives us the Communist Manifesto to read, because nothing screams English literature like a German communist, right? But this is what he gave us. This is our assignment. And we come into class the next week, and the first question out of the professor's mouth is, what do you think of capitalism? Now, keep in mind, it's not like the week before we had read Friedrich Hayek and The Road to Serfdom or Ludwig von Mises in Human Action, right? The only the only literature we were given through this entire class that had anything to do with economics was the Communist Manifesto. And for those of you that haven't read it, let me just go ahead and give you a spoiler alert. Karl Marx doesn't like capitalism. So when the professor asked that question, what do you think of capitalism? You can already tell he's kind of setting up the class to be predisposed toward a particular way of thinking. And sure enough, this one student raises his hand. He's probably about 24 to 25 years old. And he says, I think capitalism is what's destroying this country. So again, I'm not here for the college experience. I'm not here to debate with college students. I'm not in this classroom to debate with the professor. I'm just trying to get my degree finished. But I'm not going to let that go, right? So I look over the student as he starts to go into kind of his diatribe about why capitalism is so horrible. And I raise my hand and I say, look, you know, before you get started, can you give me the definition of capitalism? And he looks over at me and he goes, well, yeah, capitalism is this rigid-based class system where the people at the top hoard all the resources at the expense of the laborers and the workers at the bottom of the pyramid. And I, at that point, I just said, wait a sec, stop. I'm not asking for Karl Marx's caricature of capitalism. I know he doesn't like it. I'm asking, do you know the definition of capitalism? Professor jumps up right away and comes over and looks at me and goes, well, do you know what it is? I said, yeah, it's the private ownership of the means of production and distribution through a system of voluntary exchange. And the professor looks at me and goes, okay, we can use that. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, well, that's how generous of you. I'm so glad that when we're discussing capitalism, we can use the actual definition of capitalism. And so I look back over at the other student and I say, okay, so now that we know what the definition is, now that we've defined our terms, what's your problem with capitalism? And the student starts to realize at this point that the professor is not going to save him. He's going to have to defend himself. And so he starts backpedaling, right? And his whole thing is, well, I'm not saying that, you know, communism is the right way to go. I just think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I say, okay, great. Well, then let's define communism. Communism is the public and or government ownership of the means of production and distribution through a system of central planning. I said, but you know, look, let's put it all in layman's terms. In capitalism, I have stuff, you have stuff. I have talents, you have talents. And the only way we exchange goods and services is if you and I both agree to it and it's to mutual benefit, right? That's capitalism. Communism or socialism, because let's be honest here, Marx used the terms interchangeably, is the public or government ownership, which means the government owns the factories, the government owns all the big capital equipment, and they decide how everything is going to be distributed. And they do it through central planning, government central planning, which means, you know, various government bureaucracies decide what's going to be made, who's going to get it, how it's going to be delivered. I said, so in layman's terms, the government has the stuff. You don't have the stuff. Government has it. And the government now decides through some sort of bureaucracy who gets what. So what part of I have stuff, you have stuff, we only exchange through mutual agreement, would you like to trade for the government having the stuff and determining what's going to be distributed based off of guys with machine guns? Like what do you think's better? Like, what do you not like about the capitalist system that you would want to incorporate socialism or communism into that system? And he really didn't have an answer for that. And what was fascinating to me is that immediately following this, the professor broke the classroom down into capitalists on one side, communists on the other side, and we debated it out. And what was interesting was that at the end of that class, we had a classroom full of capitalists. But it didn't necessarily need to be that way. And when I think about how important it is to be able to make an argument, to be prepared to make an argument for what you believe, I always go back to that classroom experience. Because in that setting, it was clear that every student in there was being set up, was being predisposed to like socialism and to think that there was something fundamentally wrong with capitalism that was evil or was mean-spirited. And when I made my debate, when I made my argument for capitalism, I didn't say anything brilliant or new or earth-shattering or groundbreaking, right? I was just trying to give an accurate depiction of what these two economic systems actually produced. And the beauty of capitalism, I wasn't just making an economic argument that capitalism produces better results. I was making the argument that capitalism is superior, not just economically, but that morally it's more just. Because in a system where you treat people like individuals, where you respect their talents, you respect their abilities, you respect their property rights, they have the ability to pursue happiness in the economic world just like they would anywhere else. But when you hand all that control over to the government, well, now, again, it's politicians and some sort of political elite determining what everyone's going to get. And that inevitably can only take place if you're willing to use violence in order to achieve your economic goals. And you see that all the time in socialist systems. You saw it in the Soviet Union. You saw it in Cuba. You see it in North Korea. You see it in Venezuela. And by just simply making an argument, we were able to expose students to a definition of capitalism that I can almost guarantee you they had never heard before. And so when we look at all these statistics of students being overwhelmingly enamored with socialism and thinking it's the way that we should go as a country, I think it's important to understand that in many cases, they have been fed a caricature of capitalism and they have been fed a caricature of socialism. And it's so important that whenever you get in a debate with someone, whenever you get in an argument with someone or just a discussion with a friend, before you go into defending what it is you believe, make sure you define your terms. Because if I had just gone in talking about how great I thought capitalism was and how, you know, America versus the Soviet Union is a perfect, you know, economic representation of why capitalism works better, we would have been debating around each other the entire time. By actually coming together and agreeing on the terms first, this is the definition of capitalism, this is the definition of communism or socialism, now let's have a discussion. It forced everybody to stay within the confines of the topic. You know, they weren't able to bounce around or try to use examples that didn't really apply to the terms that we had defined. And so that's one of the things that I will always tell people when you're going to get into discussion, before you start going back and forth on your preferred systems, define your terms and find out where the other person is coming from with their own perspective. You know, the other student, he had examples of where he thought capitalism had failed, but because we defined our terms, I was able to go and demonstrate how that wasn't a failure of capitalism. It might have been a failure of, you know, someone's ability to come up with a good idea or a product or a service that customers just quite frankly didn't want. But that's not a failure of capitalism. That's just the marketplace working itself out. Because ultimately what we want is an economic system where businesses are focused not on trying to convince the government to come up with regulations or subsidies. We want an environment where businesses are focused on better serving the needs of their customers. And that produces better economic results. And quite frankly, it produces better moral results. So that's the one thing I'll leave you with is when you are debating something, first and foremost, define your terms. It's really going to help you in the discussion process. And you'll find that people are willing to give you a hearing and that you can actually make some really good points that resonate with their perspectives. You need to make your argument relevant to them, not just relevant to you. So that is making the argument on socialism, socialism in the classroom. Next, we're going to be following up with talking about things that make America great. Okay, talking about things that make America great, one of my favorite stories. We all know about the Wright brothers. We all know about them just revolutionizing aviation in America and really the world. What most people don't know is that in the early 1900s, before the Wright brothers actually had their plane up and flying in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, the government had decided that it was so essential that we be the first to have an aircraft that they decided to throw tons of money at the prospect. And they went in and they got somebody that was kind of a leading thinker in aviation at the time. He had multiple honorary degrees. He had worked with the Smithsonian. He was considered the top expert, right? So the government brings in this top expert and gives him a ton of government resources, money to be able to design a prototype. And so they got to work. Government gets to work, they spend all this money, they design a prototype, they take it up on this boat on the Potomac River, and they launch it from the roof of this boat, and it flies about as long as it took to go from the top of the boat to splash into the water. And the government, obviously never being deterred with spending your tax dollars, decides to give them a bunch more money. So clearly there was some mistakes made. Here's a bunch more taxpayer dollars. Go ahead and figure out where the mistakes and get us a workable prototype. So he goes back to the drawing boards, makes his alterations, and gets the plane back up there on the boat. And it lifts off and flies exactly as long as it takes to get to the Potomac River and crashes once again. And it was such an abysmal failure that the New York Times at the time wrote that it might be a million years before we ever have a workable aircraft. And 6 months later, two bicycle mechanics with $6,000 of their own money had a workable aircraft. And what I love about that story is that every time I hear someone say, well, why can't the government just get all the experts together and spend the resources in order to make something work? you know, we have this story of the Wright brothers, and there are literally thousands of other stories that are similar to this in American history, where two people had a dream, they had an ambition, and all the experts would have told them that they had no business doing this. That, you know, you're just two bicycle mechanics. You don't have the funding. You don't have the resources. They didn't listen to any of that. They had an idea. They had a plan. They were willing to take risks in order to make it happen, and they succeeded. And the reason why they succeeded is because in this country, we don't wait around for the New York Times or the government to tell us what is within the realm of possibility. We believe that if we are free to be able to pursue our passions, to be able to take those risks, to be able to experiment, to invent, to create, to work with other people, we can accomplish something incredible. And because they were not deterred by all the naysayers in the government and elsewhere, they revolutionized aviation, not just for this country, but for the entire world. And what I want to leave you with today is this idea that, again, in the United States, we have the ability to do that, not because of government micromanagement, but because of freedom, individual liberty, private property rights. So whenever someone is telling you that you can't accomplish something or that it's beyond the realm of what you should imagine, work down, understand that that has always been who Americans are. We're inventors, we're risk takers, we're explorers. And we should all take pride in that. And we should fight to preserve it against anybody that would tell us it's no longer possible. So that is all the time that we have for today. I want to thank you for actually spending some time with us. Also, please remember to go on to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Making the Argument with Nick Freitas. Also, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating so we can generate some more interest, get some more participation. Thank you very much.
Once again, thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, again, one of the best ways you can do it is by heading over to goodranchers.com with promo code Nick. You're going to get $15 off. You sign up for one of those subscriptions and you're going to get up to $480 of free meat with that subscription. You get to pick top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, bacon. It is all up to you. Plus, if you're looking for gifts to get for the people that are impossible to shop for, goodranchers.com also has gift boxes. You need to act quick. This is part of their overall Black Friday special. So head on over to goodranchers.com, use promo code Nick, and once again, thank you for listening.